Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. In this episode of the show, I am joined by my buddy, Peter Overzet. And, you know, first off, I just really wanted to have a conversation with Peter on a podcast because I like to talk to Peter. He is, he's fun to chat with. And, I think that this was a pretty interesting conversation. You know, we talked about the XFL as Peter is, of course, an XFL thought leader. You know, we jammed a little bit on zero RB. We talked a little bit about Bitcoin, some off season, you know, healthy habits, quote unquote, as Peter and I definitely both struggle with, you know, not being on social media all the time, creating time to, maybe not meditate, but, you know, just kind of unplug, get off of the grid for a little bit. So I think this will be a pretty relatable conversation for a lot of you guys. And I think that, you know, because Peter is the best, I think a lot of you guys are going to enjoy this discussion. Of course, if you want to support the show, patreon.com/takecast for bonus episodes. I did a little XFL recap this week. Going to be doing some more stuff like that over the course of the offseason. Just, you know, kind of some fun content, some stuff that I want to put out. Of course, you can also subscribe to dailyroto.com, who sponsors this podcast. You can use the promo code Janis, J-A-N-I-S, to get a discount for that. And you can also just go ahead and leave a rating and review on iTunes. That is useful and helpful as well. And now let's go ahead and get into the show. All right, everyone. Bringing in XFL thought leader, Peter Overzet. Couldn't be more excited. You know, I miss being able to be on camera with you once a week, man. It's been a bummer to not be able to do that.
I know, man. I keep getting the mentions that people want an XFL Swolecast. I don't know. We might have to give it to them.
It's just like asking Tuttle to do research on XFL and then asking Kitchen to like learn more player names. I feel like those guys, they're just not as dedicated to working as hard as you and I are. Like we just put our noses to the grindstone, Pete.
The funny thing is I was really ready to sail off into the off season sunset. I'm not kidding. I was going to sit the XFL out. I sat the AF league out last year and I was like, this is great. I'm just going to ignore it. It folded. I proved correct. And then you and Ian started taunting me about my XFL content and I got sucked back in and now I'm just all in and have, you know, quickly risen up the ranks to become a thought leader. And now my entire weekends are shot again.
Do you feel bad that you didn't play the team that everyone else played on DraftKings last week? Like there was a situation where in double ups there was this one specific XFL lineup on DraftKings that was owned by like 70% of the players. Do you feel bad that you didn't have that lineup even though your lineup was better?
Yeah, I know. I took down both you and Levitan. Those were the full game cash I had. I think you got my So the one biggest advantage I thought that there was on the four-game slate was stacking up that Houston Roughnecks and bringing it back with Spruce.
Yeah, you played Spruce over McKeel McKay, right?
Yeah.
Which was good. You're sharp.
Yeah, that was the only advantage I thought. I was like, people aren't going to go as all in on this team. And then I gave a lot of it back on Sunday because I was like, whatever, Hal Mummy dude, he can turn Philip Nelson into a legend. And that didn't work out at all.
That was, as the kids say, that was a pretty tough scene. What are your thoughts about the league overall? Like, do you think that this is good? Do you think that this, like when you watch the games, were you like, yeah, this is enjoyable? Like, this is, for me, it was like watching a Mac football game, basically.
Here's the thing. Like, I don't specifically like the NFL. I just like playing fantasy or DFS
Sports.
Football.
Yeah.
And the same thing for me, it's like, I don't know if this is weird to say, it's almost like when you play Showdown, right? And it's a bad game. It's like, well, if your players are doing good or the game script you went with is doing good, it doesn't matter. You're just trying to beat the other people in the game. It's like, we're all dealing with this bad play, but we're all still playing under the same rule. So I don't even really care when the level of play is bad because I'm like, the only reason I'm watching this is to see if I can beat other people at fantasy. We're all dealing with the same bad game. So I don't know. It doesn't tilt me.
Tilt me either. Oh, well, it tilted me on Sunday when I had Aaron Murray in the two game on FanDuel, and I was like, this is one of the worst. Like, this, it was horrible to watch Aaron Murray play again.
Well, the thing about that frustrated me about that two game was I went all in on Philip Nelson. So when I watched Aaron Murray bomb and knew everyone had him, I was like, oh, we're about to print today. I literally missed. I played one of the $100 single entries on FanDuel the 2 day. I missed the cash line, Davis, by 2.6 points with like a Renegades onslaught, like literally anything. One touchdown.
Yeah, maybe no touchdowns.
It just was like so frustrating. But yeah, back to our whole thing. I don't care about like the quality of the product. I thought it was just entertaining from a production value standpoint. I mean, getting to hear the referee in the booth talk it out and do it quickly, like, I don't know. I thought that was really done well. And
the coolest thing is the kickoff, because they all get returned. There's going to be no touchbacks. The fact that the reviews happen right, like that you get to go in the booth for the reviews, and that you get to hear some of the play calls, right? Like that is all very awesome. Like that's just that stuff was all cool. And like Hal Mummy's towel also.
Yeah. And I don't give a shit about the sideline interviews or that access, because players aren't going to ever really tell you anything interesting anyways, but it's hearing the coaches talk, hearing the refs talk, like all the things that you're not normally privy to where you actually get cool insight into how this stuff is going down, I thought was made it interesting. But I'm telling you right now, I did it this weekend. I can't watch 4 football games over the weekend. Like I can't do it. So I'm going to be downshifting out of sweating. I'm still going to play XFL DFS, but I can't watch 4 games, Davis.
Why? Why can't, cause you have like a life and you got stuff to do.
Yeah. I mean, I probably don't even have that much stuff to do. I can't justify how sick would it be if it was all 4 games on at once and we had a red zone channel. That would be the pinnacle.
You are correct that would be like a lot better of like a, well, it would be a lot more conducive for like living, right? For the fact that I had to dedicate like 9 hours of my weekend to following these games, because like I want to play more XFL DFS too, so like I thought an important part of that was like watching the games to like understand like how are these guys getting used, are the offenses good, like so on and so forth. And I basically realized I had to watch that first weekend. I think I could probably get away not watching, like, and still playing now, though.
Well, yeah, and now when we look at the schedule, we have a little bit of a feel for what we're getting. So when we see like Vipers and the Dragons, I can just be like, nah, wave, you know? It's like, right. Oh, is Philip Walker playing? Okay, is Landry Jones playing? This is after I just said that I didn't care about the level of QB play, but yeah, I can't be sweating these for 8 hours every weekend. So
yeah, I'm probably gonna be on the same wavelength as you. Okay, have you been able to read any books over the off season?
So yeah, I think it was. Did we talk? Was it like a year ago when we did the first podcast?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, last year I was locked into just such a good morning routine, and I finally this week just like put my foot down and. I hadn't been using an alarm clock for probably the past year, but I had gotten into some bad habits here of just like staying up late and then sleeping in a little bit later. So just this week, I started setting my alarm to get up earlier just to kind of reset my body clock. And that's now got me back to reading and doing the things I like to do in the morning and get my day off on the right start. But as far as reading, I'm going to Japan in a month, so I've been reading a bunch of Murakami. He's my favorite
author. Have you ever not traveled on a weekend? have you ever spent a weekend at your home in the Boston suburbs?
Yeah,
ever?
Last weekend watching Brandon Silver's.
So you decided that was enough of that. Just never again.
Although it's funny you say that, because I'm already looking to make a pilgrimage back to the MetLife to watch a Guardians to
go,
game.
So I'm going to go. The Battlehawks first home game is not this weekend, but February 23rd, and I'm going for sure.
Wait. Okay. Because I have one weekend basically coming out, because I'm going to be gone for a lot of March. that's the one weekend I can go. Should I fly out and go to a Battlehawks game with you?
I mean, yeah, dude, that would be dope if you wanted to.
All right.
It'd be pretty fun.
Because that was the one weekend, and the Guardians don't play that weekend. One of my buddies, his friend works in marketing at the XFL too. He just put me in contact with her, so might be able to get us tickets.
Who is our Patrick Laird gonna be?
I mean, there's so many slot wide receivers that are just matching right now. Like, Spruce is like big, dude.
Spruce should be an NFL player, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, he's good.
Yeah. Do you know who I kind of, do you know who could probably be our Laird is, that little like running back gadget player, Holly on the Roughnecks.
Nick Holly for the Roughnecks.
Yeah.
You think he's in?
Well, I think he's going to be a sneaky guy to play here coming up, because you can punt him off, at least on FanDuel. You could play him in at running back.
At running back.
And they're using him as their like fourth guy in wide receiver sets and stuff too. So I say you get in on the ground floor of the Holly train.
Well, let me tell you this. No league has running backs ever mattered less ever than the XFL. I mean, it's like these dudes – like every team used like four guys, like guys who weren't even listed on depth charts were like getting goal line touches. Like it really does not matter in the XFL, which I love.
It was so good. What was it? Lance Dunbar wasn't even on the depth chart. It had just like outproduced Cameron Artis Payne. I mean, you love to see it.
Everyone, all the sharps were all over Cap.
Yeah, it was.
What can you do?
It's great. Yeah, all of the scat backs and the pass catching backs are going to end up being way more valuable. I mean, and did we even get – was there even a single goal line rushing TD over the weekend? I don't think there was, right?
I don't believe there was a goal line rushing touchdown. There was a goal line rushing two-point conversion, a couple of them. Devion Smith for the Guardians got one.
Yeah, and he actually probably looked the best to me of any of the.
Or wait, is Devion Smith even on the Guardians? That might have been fake news.
Oh no, Devion is Vipers, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so it was Tim Cook, I think.
Okay, yeah, you're right. So yeah, but it's like all of these games are or teams have committee backs and stuff. So just getting to just pay down at running back to jam wide receivers, it feels so good.
So next year for the XFL main event, like our zero RB strategy is going to be, it's going to be pretty prime, I feel like.
Dude, how did the FFPC and these providers not just throw up, cobble together some XFL best ball and season long drafts?
So last year, I think there were contests on fan ball, I believe. Does that sound right?
Maybe. Yeah.
So, but I don't know. It's like, I mean, the fact that DraftKings filled all of these GPPs in the first week seems like, I mean, they filled 100K GPPs. Like, that's wild.
Dude, if DraftKings really wants to bankrupt me, put up contests for an XFL live final. I will just put my entire net worth into trying to qualify for that. Oh my God.
That would truly be a sight. All right. Is zero running back kind of dead, a little dead, or completely dead for real fantasy football?
Okay. Well, from a content perspective, it is alive and well, because there's nothing that does better impressions during draft season than talking about zero RB. So I assume you, myself, Denny Carter, we're going to keep talking about it forever. But as far as what the data says, I think zero true zero RB, not drafting your running back till the sixth round, that is, you know, that a gif of like the monkey that has the wires in its mouth on its last breath, the orangutan. That's kind of what real zero RB is. But the modified zero RB of only taking one RB in the first six rounds, not only is it alive and well, it is the optimal strategy for fantasy league. So I guess it's how we want to define it.
I mean, I think that modified zero RB is like, that's like, that was like what I was about in 2019, was just like you take CMC or DJ or whoever in the first round, and then you stockpile wide receivers after that. The issue with that strategy this last year, well, really it was twofold, right? So we had the issue where a bunch of the bad running backs actually had good seasons, like Leonard Fournette, terrible draft pick, turned out a good season. But the bigger issue was all of the fill-in running backs sucked, and other than Michael Thomas, the wide receiver ones didn't really give you much of an advantage at all.
Right. And the thing that's interesting, I think, is actually looking, okay, what's a micro trend for this year and what is still actually the macro trend? And I got to plug Jack Miller on RotoViz had a great series in January looking at these hit rates. And basically, the running backs, like you said, in rounds 3 through 6, way outscored their historical trends. It was, like you said, Fournette, Carson, Derrick Henry.
Imagine like the boomer teams like that drafted Henry, Fournette, and Chris Carson, and they're just laughing at all of the zero running back losers.
Yeah, but this is why it actually sets up so perfectly again for next year, is because wide receivers in rounds 3 through 6 also smash. And they historically always smash in that range. That's where we get our second-year breakout guys. You know, your DJ Moores, your Godwins, etc. Now this year, people are going to overdraft running backs in rounds 3 through 6, chasing the Aaron Jones, Henry Carsons. We're going to scoop up the wide receivers, and people don't want to draft late-round running backs because we didn't have the Kamara or James Conner this year, and it was an anomaly outlier of a year for late running back hit. So to me, it sets up great again. The problem is, like you said, I did modified zero RB in both of my high stakes drafts, Damian Williams in one and David Johnson in the other. And on paper, structurally, it looks great, but there's still so many landmines with running backs.
I mean, Damian shouldn't have even been a landmine. I mean, how, like what insane run bad. Like Damien should have been like the RB6 overall, and he just gets banged up, and then LeSean McCoy gets a couple touches here and there, and Darrell Williams gets like a couple games here and there, and it just like it worked out in the exact worst possible way for Damien. But like I'm probably gonna draft him in the second round this year again. Like you can't stop me.
I mean, and that is the thing too, like that I think is the toughest part structurally. And you probably thought about it more than I have, because I haven't really thought about redraft ADP and stuff, but it's like, if you miss out on the McCaffrey or Barkley or whoever, Kamara, the guys you feel are good, then you're in that, I got a guess range. Like if you nailed Dalvin Cook this year, like props to you, but that seemed dicey. And this year it's like, yeah, Damien is going to fit that mold, but people also were chasing Kerryon in a similar position too. So it's like, there's so much speculation of trying to hit it and thread the needle when the historical rates are just so poor for running backs in that range.
And it's, but not, like, that's not going to matter to people at all. The fact that the historical rates, like another interesting thing, I think that Alvin Kamara might be like a second round pick this year, because he was bad last year. And there's like, you know, some will he, won't he with Drew Brees and like Taysom Hill goal line pack. There's going to like definitely Sean Payton at some point this offseason is going to be like, oh yeah, we have a package for Taysom, right?
Oh yeah.
Like that's happening.
I saw that stuff with Taysom Hill and how he wants to be a starting QB, and I was like, can we get Taysom Hill to the Tampa Bay Vipers? Because that would spice up this season. Imagine how fun that would be.
That would make the, like, watching Taysom Hill whelp around would certainly, I think, make the season, like, a little bit more interesting. But yeah, I mean, there's always this thing with NFL fans where, like, guys like Taysom Hill, like, just, like, the total tryhards, NFL people just love guys like that. They can't help themselves. So like all of these like kind of intelligent football fans are like, oh yeah, no, Taysom Hill can be a starting quarterback in the NFL. And let me tell you this. Taysom Hill cannot be a starting quarterback in the NFL. He is not good.
Well, it goes back to the whole like dangers of watching the tape. Like I think who's a good example of this? Auden Tate this year had so many highlight reel catches, but I don't even think he
had like a 37% catch rate.
Yeah. He just makes every single catch look incredible, but it's like, that's not a guy you want to be chasing. But in our minds, we're like, no, that dude's good.
You got to watch the film, dude.
Yeah.
I think another interesting thing about next season is how early do George Kittle and Travis Kelce go? Like, not even in the FFPC where it's tight end premium, but I think that because there were a lack of like really dominant wide receiver seasons, it would not surprise me if we have like a Jimmy Graham, Rob Gronkowski thing going on with those guys where they're like both back end of the first round picks.
Yeah, but because it always seems like that ADP is mostly reflective of just recency bias, and where, what was it, 2 years ago, we were coming off of the massive Kittle and Kelce seasons.
Yeah.
And don't you think it might course correct a little bit this year just because none of them had that like top five, even like tight end premium scoring season overall?
I really think it's going to depend on how much conversation we like on just what people decide to do with the running backs who are do not project well but had good seasons last year. Like, is Derrick Henry really going to go fifth overall? Like, if that's the case, then like, I don't know. I have no trust in the market to also not make similar decisions with George Kittle. Like, and just force him up.
And those are the decisions that. Or you basically run into every year, right? Where it's like the people who are like, I got to get my running backs. And if I don't take Henry or Joe Mixon or whoever here, then I'm just going to be left holding the bag. And then there's going to be the people that are like, okay, I'm comfortable taking Michael Thomas Adams, one of the tight ends or whatever. And those are kind of always the decision points that happen. But yeah, I could see Kelce and Kittle being at the turn. It always ends up being kind of relative to the draft and some owners. All it takes is like the one guy in the league that's like, I want to jam two tight ends every week and bang, bang,
right.
And then it starts a run. But I feel like they always settle in that like early to mid second round ADP, regardless of the season they're coming off of.
It will. I think another thing that will be interesting is like, what do people do with DeAndre Hopkins, who had like, you know, like a pretty disappointing season? You know who's going to end up on all of your high stakes teams is going to be Will Fuller. Coming off of the and Christian Kirk, both of those guys are going to be on. You're just like set yourself up for that. Now you're going to have to sweat those guys out every single week.
Yeah, you're completely right. Like I said, I hadn't really thought that through, but those are definitely going to be the guys that slip to the sixth and seventh round that you're just like every time. Okay, I guess I have to take them. But dude,
yeah,
Kyler and Kirk are going to explode next year, so I can live with it.
Yeah, I mean, this is another good question. What do you think they do with that running back situation? So they got Kenny Drake, David Johnson, Chase Edmonds. What do you think happens like with those guys? And are we taking David Johnson in the ninth round and just being like, whatever, dude, like let's let it happen?
Well, what is David Johnson's like contract situation? Is he for sure going to be on the team?
He for real can't be cut. It'd be like $17 million of dead money or something.
Yeah.
Like crazy.
And they signed Drake, right? Like, did they extend him, or did they just?
So we got a classic Twitter situation where he tweeted out his changed his avatar into like him and his Cardinals jersey, like hashtag new profile pic. So I think most people are assuming that he's locked into being on the roster.
Well, I would say the one thing from a fantasy perspective is, even though they had these three guys, it seemed like Cliff really wanted to have a bell cow in most games. Like, we didn't get too much of the dreaded committee with them. So, you know, for drafts, the best way to approach it is probably just take the cheapest one of those guys and hope, whether through injuries or whatever, that they end up getting the starting role. But at least it wasn't like a true three-way mess like so many of these backfields now.
Yeah, I mean, you just kind of knew like, whoever's starting that week is actually just going to go ahead and get all the touches.
Yeah, because both Chase, Drake, and David Johnson all had, I want to say, a couple RB1 weeks between them. So that at least was reliable.
Do you know where Sammy Watkins is going in drafts right now?
Man, dude, he's double digits.
He's literally in like the 16th round.
And where's Hardman going? Like eighth?
Yeah, like way higher. But it's just like, yeah. Okay, well, it's great. It's going to be another year of tying myself to Sammy Watkins. But at least it's going to be more cost manageable this time.
yeah.
So like that's pretty nice.
Whatever. So you've been. I see you've been ramping up your dynasty. You taking on some orphans.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to do more FFPC. I wanted to do a couple of them, and I just figured, the lobby is not open yet, so I wanted to take over an orphan. And the only reason I took over this team, which is a total nightmare, is that it has Damian Williams on it. And yeah. I just, you know, when you can get more Damian equity, are you in any dynasty leagues? I don't even know.
Yeah, I've pared it way down. I'm in like a hometown type league with a bunch of buddies that I played in for like 4 or 5 years. And then I'm in one with like Reeves and Sean Siegel, the Fake Goods League, Tyler Bucher. And that one's pretty good. But if I add one, I want to do a best ball one. I just don't want to add any man.
We should definitely start like, cause I know I like Drew and Leone and all those guys Kitchen. We could start another 12 team super flex best ball dynasty league for sure.
Yeah, let's do that, because I want to do another startup draft just with none of the in-season maintenance.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're all trying to do. It is such a bummer, though, to think about getting action down on this year of season-long fantasy because draft doesn't exist. Yeah. So it's like it's created this huge vacuum, and you know, I'm hoping that Yahoo picks it up. I'm hoping that FanDuel launches something, but like it's gonna suck to not have that.
Yeah. Actually, you'll like this because I was listening to your podcast. Who did you do it with? Who are you talking about Noah Fant with? Well, oh, was it
Graham? Graham Barfield?
Or no. It was Curtis. I listened to that one too. Yeah. But so I'm in a league where I'm pretty loaded at with picks and assets, but I have like no tight end. So I was like, I'll start shopping around. I was trying to move Raheem Mostert. So I started sending out some offers. I tried Mostert for Fant, and Tyler Bucher just countered literally a few minutes ago asking for my 201. And I believe you guys were kind of saying that 201, I should ship that for Fant, right?
Oh yeah. Big time. You have Raheem Mostert. I mean, if Raheem Mostert, is he even going to get 100 carries next year? Well,
that's why I'm trying to move him, because I figure his name's a little hot, but all these guys are sharp. So it's not like I'm pulling a fast one, but I figured I'd try.
Oh, I do that. Noah Fant is a stud, dude.
I know. I think I should do that. I thought he was going to go for more. I also have the 101 in this league too, which speaks to how well my season went last year. But you know, we're sitting on
what a baller, dude. Who you taking 101?
Dude, am I going to be forced into taking a wide running back?
I think the 101 and 102s are both going to be running backs in most leagues. I think it'll be Jonathan Taylor and J.K. Dobbins.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a pretty – the thing about this league, the fake good one, is you only have to start one running back. And so it's tempting when you can start 6 wide receivers to just continue to load up on wide receivers.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, though, there is a big advantage in dynasty leagues right now in having Ezekiel Elliott, Nick Chubb, like any of these dudes who just get 20 carries a week, because you – like – If you are a competent fantasy football player, you have 6 wide receivers who you can start on any given week, and the number of like guys you're scrounging up on the waiver wire in dynasty leagues at running back is like, I mean, unless you're good at dynasty like me and you picked up Bo Scarborough last year, you probably are not scooping up very many guys off the waiver wire.
You'll like that, because I'm looking at this roster right now and I have Bo Scarborough on it. So
that's how I know you're good at fantasy, Pete. That's how I know.
Do you know who else is on this team? And I'm doing your segue for you. Our Laird and Saver, baby.
Our Laird, buddy. I traded many, many rookie third round picks for Patrick Laird last year.
That's how I know you're bad, because I got them for free everywhere.
That's how I mean. That's, yeah. So Laird, and I think you and I probably had the same experience with Laird, where like we saw that tweet from Alan Poirot. I don't know. How do you pronounce his last name?
I saw you tweet it. Yeah.
Wow. So I was on the Laird beat faster than you were.
You were.
You love it. I just am never offline. You occasionally get offline, well, I think.
Tell the people what the tweet is if they didn't see it.
Oh, so Laird is basically participating in this super nerdy program where he gets to go be an intern for a senator, right? Is that what Joe Manchin is? I don't even know.
West Virginia senator. It's some program that they've had. I think I had heard of the program before. I will say, Davis, I think just as a little thing, we we owe Patrick Laird an apology for a lot of reasons, but the main reason is when people in the fantasy space now hear the name Patrick Laird, they have a Pavlovian response
to get tilted.
To get tilted, where they think of us ramming that bit down their throat for a month. And they have a negative connotation with Patrick Laird, which we need to kind of do some PR rehab, because the dude is the nicest,
realest, he's so nice,
coolest, legendary person out there. And we have done him a disservice by sullying his name for our comedic purposes. The dude is incredible. No bit.
It's true. Like, he is, Patrick Laird is super nice. He has no, he had like no, like negative motivations in hanging out with us or talking to us or anything. Like, he just was like, oh, like these guys are nice and they like me, so like, I'd like to spend time with, like, you know, I'd like to meet them, whatever. And like, he was super gracious to us after, I'm sure, what was like just a miserable day for him against the New York Giants. Like, that was the worst he played as a member of the Dolphins, and the team got blown out, and he still like hung out with us. And now people are mad at him because they don't like us.
Yeah. And it is actually really interesting, the kind of the running back situation for them going into this season, because it's a hot topic now, right? That the Dolphins have 3 first round picks, and also hashtag fins up. And what, how are they going to spend these picks? And there's a lot of the boomers out there that want them to draft an early running back, when it's pretty clearly obvious, even Laird stuff aside, that you take a quarterback, a couple offensive linemen or whatever. But I do really think if the Dolphins play this right, they're going to add a running back in the mid rounds. And I do think Laird is going to stick around on the roster as the special teams, the pass catching back. And I think he's going to be involved next season.
He's going to be involved. They probably, I mean, he's going to be involved because he's a GOAT special teams player. Like,
yeah, but I think too, it, and it depends on like the skill set that of the running back that they add. You know, obviously if they add a guy with a 3-down skill set, that's going to cap his usage. But if they get more of a, you know, we even saw last year the Raiders take Josh Jacobs, and they're still using DeAndre Washington and Jalen Richard. So I don't know. I think he's still going to get touches in the running back game.
Yeah, and I mean, also, you know, big sigh of relief that the person he's doing an internship is a Democrat. That was that was Google number one when I saw that result, because I mean, not that I would sweat that for our boy, because he's a good man, but definitely had to sweat that one out a little bit. He said on Twitter, by the way, he's gonna come back on the show. He said sometime in March he would like to come back on the show. So that's as the kids say, it's lit.
Yeah, your reply at hitting him up 2 months in advance was a little thirsty, but that's how you've kind of played this whole situation from the get-go, so I can't say I was surprised.
Oh, so brutal, dude. So brutal. I mean, what can you do?
Did you hear Derrick Henry? He's doing an externship with Alex Jones down at InfoWars. Really tough seat.
Dude. The Kansas City Chiefs and Damian Williams beating the Tennessee Titans. Honestly, I really mean this, I may have been more happy when the Chiefs beat the Titans than when they won the Super Bowl. Like, at the very least, the 2 days were very comparable, because all of these losers on the internet, these absolute losers, they were feeling so big in their britches when the Titans beat the Ravens. I really don't think I could have lived. I don't think I could have been on Twitter in like a post Titans beating the Kansas City Chiefs world. I may have had to retire.
Yeah, you would have taken that one on the chin. See, you, what happens too with like being on Twitter and making like takes is like you end up, the extent, you know, it's for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And you knew that the whiplash boomerang effect on that, on hating on Derrick Henry, would have just come back at you with the fire of 1,000 suns. So you just felt, you were more relieved, I would bet, than anything.
I mean, here's the thing. At no point did I think that the Tennessee Titans were going to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, pretty much a quarter into the Ravens game, I was like, well, I'm just going to have to eat this, because it's just not going to work out for the Ravens. It's just one of those things. And the Chiefs were just too good. And also at a certain point, math wins, right? Math always wins in the end. It's a beautiful thing about math. And I feel so happy. I feel so, like the Chiefs won the Super Bowl. Damian Williams should have won Super Bowl MVP. I mean, Damian Williams had 2 touchdowns and 130 yards in the Super Bowl. Like everyone who hates me was miserable, and that's a good feeling. Like to know that everyone who doesn't like me had a miserable experience watching that game does feel good.
I mean, even from a macro perspective, it, like, even if the 49ers would have won, I mean, just the off-season discourse of, you know, you need to run the ball 45 times a game to win a Super Bowl. I'm just glad we don't have to listen to that. It would have set the league back another 5 years, it feels like.
I mean, I think that we're going to see a little bit of that from coaches over the offseason. They're going to talk about, like, the Jaguars are going to talk about how, you know, they have their own Derrick Henry in Leonard Fournette. Like we are going to hear a little bit of this stuff happen over the offseason, no doubt in my mind, 100%. Like we are going to hear, because of the teams that led the NFL in rushing, I think 3 of them made the conference championships, right? I think that's how that went. So like we're like, once we get, you know, 3-4 months away from Patrick Mahomes going nuclear and winning the Super Bowl, we are going to start to hear that stuff without a doubt in my mind.
Yeah. And for fantasy purposes, like, it's great. You know, I want people taking running backs in rounds 2 through 6 as much as possible. So if people want to continue to do that, you know, they pass the eye test, the I know better picks, let it all happen.
Dude, the I know better, like, I mean, there's going to be a ton of I know better picks next year. I actually feel like the kind of just the weirdness and randomness of this season, like, yes, we had to eat it. Though, actually, I did 4 high stakes leagues and got like profited on 2 of the 4 entries. So I didn't get totally wiped out.
Yeah. To me, it was I've joked about it, but it's real. Like my biggest misstep this season was just drafting Kyler over Lamar.
Over Lamar.
Cause those were the 2 that like, you knew you had to go out and get one of them. And I didn't diversify. Me and Pat, we just went all in on Kyler everywhere. And that changes your season, you know, if you have Lamar instead of Kyler.
So in the leagues that I did, the 4 high stakes leagues, did not get Lamar in any of them. And I think we added it up. We cumulatively missed out on Lamar when we had him in our queue by like a combined like 14 total picks across 3 different leagues. One of the leagues I did with some other friends, but like that's also very tough to know, is that like, I mean, obviously in casual leagues, you could just get Lamar wherever because there were all those people that were like, oh, he's just a running back or whatever. But in the high stakes leagues, I mean, people knew.
Yeah. Yep. That was missing out on that.
They also knew to draft Darwin Thompson in the 8th round. So there's like – that is something that I will very much keep in mind drafting in the FFPC next year, which is just that like – but if you're drafting in August, you probably just got to say you're not getting – Justice Hill, you're not getting, like, just plan on not being able to draft those guys because there's no equity in getting them then.
You know what those guys are? They are the, man, I'm setting up your segue so good. They are the altcoins, the hot alts of fantasy picks, where it's
they're dragging deep brain chain or whatever.
Right. And if you drafted, you know, Darwin when he was the 17th, 18th round, you know, back when we were doing the Scott Fishbowl, then great. Profit. That's like a perfect thing. But when you're taking him in the 7th round of the FFPC, like, you are now underwater. You have bought all the upside. The thing that is tough, though, is if you are going 0RB, even modified 0RB, you know, you're taking wide receivers through round 6. I mean, the handcuffs are just as trendy that you're having to pay a premium, and yet you do need to fill your bench with running back slots. So it does get hard.
You gotta learn to love shitty, boring running backs.
Yeah. Well, Pat and I have talked about this a little bit because every year we've gone to the FFPC, we've drafted on like literally the day before
the
full main slate, and just all the values obliterated. It's like betting closing lines in NFL or whatever. It's just, you might as well flip a coin and hope to get lucky. Whereas I want to just do a draft this year online immediately when it opens up. I'll still go out to Vegas, do content, like have fun, maybe do a best ball draft or something. But the mains, I think if you're on top of stuff, do it as early as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, that's just good advice, right? I mean, that's good advice for whatever fantasy format you're in. It's just like, or betting, just do it. Try and stay on top of things and do it as early as possible. Because like have you got a chance to look over Ed Miller's Logic of Sports Betting yet?
Yeah, I've actually, I enjoyed your interview you did with him. I've been kind of just cherry picking chapters and bouncing around. And it's really good.
So of like all the books I've ever read that have pertained to gambling or sports or whatever, I've probably taken the most away from that book. And probably the number one thing is just like, don't bet closing lines. Don't like do things as early as possible. And I mean, obviously that's very hard to apply for DFS, but for seasonal, obviously, you know, like, oh, dude. I mean, who can forget the conversations last year of, oh, well, the draft best ball championship, it's already been solved because Tyreek is back from being non-suspended. And, oh, the other one was Duke Johnson, obviously. And everyone's just like, oh, well, the winner's already been drafted. And turns out the winner had very much not been drafted. So that was, I mean, I always find it funny when people are so sure that they are right and they're just clearly, obviously, wrong in the end, because I've been in that situation many times myself. So the last thing that I want to talk to you about before I let you get back to working from home is just like Coin Talk Show is gone, so I don't get to talk about Bitcoin with anyone, really. Like they're just, you know, like I don't get to hear people I think are smart talk about Bitcoin. So Jay and Aaron, if you're listening to this, yeah. You're probably not bring Coin Talk Show back, but. Just what are your feelings about Bitcoin right now? Where are we at with BTC?
Well, I mean, it's literally pumping at this very second. I just pulled it up. It's at 10.2. And I was looking at my logs because I just have a weekly buy. And I was looking back literally on December 16th, my buy was at 71.38. It's up, what, 5? I can't do math right now. It's up over 3,000. Since that last buy in just what, a month and a half. So yeah, I mean, my relationship with Bitcoin right now, and it goes back to those, like you said, the overconfidence, the emotions, you know, during that first bull run, I learned some tough lessons and now I feel like I've kind of detached emotions from it. And I just have a weekly buy and I don't really put too much thought into it. I just think of it as like an investment vehicle and I'm not going to be, you know, swayed by the swings, but don't get me wrong. It's sure fun to have all my buys in here at 7 and see that it's up over 10.
So this is my relationship with Bitcoin right now. When it's over 10,000, I'm just like, life is good. I'm doing victory laps. I'm tweeting Bitcoin gifts at everyone on Twitter who asks for investment advice. And then when it's under 10K, I'm just like, oh, guys, it's on sale, right? Like, I'm like, oh, I got Bitcoin's on sale. And I never sell. Right. Yeah. And I have a weekly buy and then I have a monthly buy. So that's so that I just am always, you know, just always be stacking sats, really. And I mean, I feel very good about it. And, you know, I think actually the premise that we had the first time you came on the podcast was I wanted to talk to you about Libra. And guess what doesn't exist anymore? Libra existed for all of about a week and then it got bigly shut down.
It is kind of crazy, like all the things, alts, Libra, you know, that have come and gone. And Bitcoin, it just keeps plugging away. It's just here. And just by virtue of sticking around, it's just harder for it to go away each and every passing day. The fact that it's at over 10K now too, I think just kind of really speaks to its longevity and holding power. So yeah, I'm still excited about it. But I am kind of, it's in the same way, you know how when you research a DFS slate and then you put more action on it because you feel like you know it really well. Where it's like, I'm afraid of like getting too much into like watching YouTube videos, reading content. Like I understand the technology, I understand the fundamentals, but I don't want to get worked up into a, oh, I need to go make a big, you know, one-off buy.
Yeah.
So I like keeping it at an arm's distance.
Yeah, keeping it at an arm. I mean, that's probably that is probably intelligent for any investment, right? Another great book recommendation, if for those of you out there, if you're looking to tune into this podcast to get book recommendations, is Fortune's Formula by William Poundstone. It's nominally, it's kind of about the Kelly Criterion, but it's really more about a group of guys who just like, you know, beat the market, but they didn't really beat the market. And in fact, they kind of more just believe that the market is overall efficient, and so that you should treat it as such. But one of the big takeaways from that book was just like, hedge funds that do well are mostly just running on the good side of variance. And the best thing to do if you are looking to invest your money is just buy index funds and just ride the market, basically. Yeah. Which pertains to Bitcoin as well.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, the thing, it's like with all this stuff, I mean, unless you have like intimate knowledge of specific sectors, or you have kind of some advantage over the market, like you're just going to get burned. I mean, there's just so many people and algorithms that are just way better at this. Like, I can't even fathom the idea of trading or you're doing some of the stuff that these guys do, but it's not my life. It's not how I'm spending my time. So it's just thinking of these as larger, you know, emotional detached investment vehicles, I think, is the way to go for us normies.
The concept of being a trader in 2020 and not just like having an algorithm designed to like beat like micro mini millisecond edges in the market is like if someone told me they were like trying to like trade like by hand, like manually, I would just be like, you're an idiot. Be like, yeah. Why? Like, what's even the point? Like, really, yeah. What's the point?
Well, it also, the other kind of sobering thought too is like, say you know something really well, say it's DFS or whatever, and then you read an article in the New York Times about DFS and you're reading through and you're like, well, that's a miscategorization. No, that's not true. No, this isn't understanding the point. And then it's like, well, think about all the other things I read in papers of record,
exactly,
and take as truth that don't have the industry, you know, domain expertise on it that they probably should if they're writing about it.
Which is like what I would assume, you know, many, many people are getting their information that they're using to make financial decisions on is stuff like that.
Yeah. And not to mention, it's like, it's the same that we see with like DFS and stuff that moves ownership. It's like all that information is publicly available so quickly now to everyone that there's very likely not an edge in that piece of information. Yeah, it's tough. I don't know. It's very tough to beat the market in anything.
I mean, that's the whole efficient market hypothesis, is that people that beat the market over the short term probably just got lucky in that most markets are efficient. I don't really know if I like believe that overall. Like, I think that most markets have like, well, the less liquid a market is, the more beatable it is. Something I noticed is if you're really trying to degen out listening to this, XFL live lines, because there is no historical modeling really to put into this stuff, not only do we not know how the 2 points and the 3 points and that stuff interact, but like coaching decisions and stuff is not built into these models at all. So for example, the St. Louis Battlehawks were up, what was it, 12-6 or 10-6 in that game against the Renegades, but they were 3.5 point dogs and they were +110 on the money line in the fourth quarter in the game against the Renegades. And I was like, I mean, the team that's winning shouldn't be a dog right now. But yeah. like normally when you make those bets, you think like, oh, this action will get canceled or this was a misposting or whatever. But that one paid out, which was just like, I was shocked.
There you go. Yeah, no, the live lines are fun. Even like, again, I feel so stupid talking about like sports betting things that, you know, people know more.
I'm not the first person to discover that live lines are, this is a point literally stolen from Ed's book.
Well, yeah, but even just the, but like you were saying, I mean, I saw it a lot in the NFL playoffs where like, say when the Chiefs were big favorites over, you know, Houston or the Titans, and it's like that, you know, whatever their thing was, and they go down, you know, that first touchdown and the odds just pump.
Yeah, they're like, -150 all of a sudden.
Yeah, and it's like the thesis behind the play, you know, didn't change overall in the game. It almost feels like, I started being like, you know what? If I didn't make too many big bets on the Super Bowl too, because I was like, I'll just watch. And if I think, because I like the Chiefs, and I was like, oh, if the Chiefs get down early, then maybe I'll put the bet. You know, just that idea of like, can you value hunt with the live lines on who you think's the better team?
I mean, certainly you can sometimes. And there's also, you know, there's also a lot of value in watching the games. Like if you like watching, like if you'd been watching that Vipers Guardians game and you were like, dude, holy crap, Aaron Murray's like the worst quarterback I've ever seen. They were still favored for like a good chunk of that first half. And you could have, you could have just been hammering that Guardians money line, because I never want to see Aaron Murray on my TV again, basically. Oh,
I felt good. I had made one XFL futures bet, and it was the Vipers under 7.5 win total, nice. Which just feels so good right now.
I am 4-1 on XFL bets. I live bet the Vipers at half, or maybe it was in the second. They were plus 7.5. That was the one I lost.
There you go.
Tough scenes.
I donked it up with so the over unders first came out, and I messaged Jimino because he had been doing a lot of the XFL stuff over at RG, and I was like, what's your thought on these? And he's like, those all seem high to me. So I just blanket bet the unders on all of those. Then I watched the first game, and you know, there was a lot of like stalled out scoring drives. I'm like, these games are gonna shoot out. I was like, and so then I course corrected, and I was like, I'm getting back and bet the overs on them. And I was looking good with, you know, PJ Walker and in that game. And then of course, then Sunday they both go under. So that's me as a sports bettor, is literally changing my mind halfway through and just paying the rake and other than breaking even. So take advice from me.
I mean, you love to see it. You love to see it. What are you going to do for content over the off season? Are you just chilling right now?
Yeah,
does Fantasy Mensa have something planned?
No, I mean, Denny's taken his
hiatus. Oh, yeah, his 69 days off.
Yeah, he's working on his a book. Like I said, I'm going on a long trip in March, so I'm just kind of – I've been doing a bunch of research for that, and I'm excited to, XFL aside, just take at least March off, and then we'll see. Yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, no official content stuff right now.
Well, I mean, if people out there want you and I to do a podcast about something, I mean, obviously we're going to get our Laird back, on the show eventually, but if people, you know, if you guys want Pete and I to do a show about something, if you have content ideas for us, maybe we will do an XFL podcast only. Although this podcast was more XFL heavy than I had originally planned on.
Well,
what can you do?
That's all. It's that we have our fingers on the pulse. That's all that matters right now.
It's true. You are an XFL thought leader, and I wouldn't dare take that away from you.
Dude, when Ian asked about, when he prodded me on Twitter for being like, you know, where's your XFL content? And I had changed my Twitter bio to say XFL thought leader. I gained, no joke, like 400 followers from all of his people thinking that they were actually following like a legit XFL guy. So thanks to Ian for, you know, feeding my family.
People are thirsty for it, man. It's crazy. Like they're loving this stuff. Good for them.
Good for them, man. But I need a break, man. I need a break.
So Peter's not watching this weekend. Everyone, thanks for listening to the show. I will be back next week with some more content, probably some more actionable content in the next episode. I'm recording with Vlad Sedler, RotoGut, on high stakes fantasy baseball. I'm going to play in the NFBC this year. I'm going to do a team with Nate and Sammy. We're doing the Gil Cascos high stakes. Oh, it's going to be good stuff.
Well, I mean, Sammy, like, he's deep in those MLB streets, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Like, whatever. Guy, he's like playing poker, like, half professionally right now, so good for him.
I know, man. I enjoyed that episode. It's cool to hear his thoughts.
Yeah, I'm loving trying to, you know, not be horrible at poker right now. So that's currently my life.
Well, playing while you're doing an interview seems like a great place to start with not being horrible at it.
It's like I always got to be getting better. I always got to be getting better, Peter, you know? That's the most important thing. It's just always about trying to get better. All right, buddy. Thanks for doing the show. Everyone, you know, give Peter some more Twitter followers. He needs some more Twitter followers. He only has like 10,400. We're trying to make him better. And so I'd appreciate it if as a personal favor, you guys went ahead and gave Peter a follow. And we will be back next week.